Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective right here. Beautiful night, Wednesday night. And right now we have with us from China Grove, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Fired up, Dave. Attended the Pirate Armada down in Charlotte tonight at the Vigilite Theater and got to hear John Gilbert and then Coach Houston, as well as new head men's basketball coach Mike Schwartz speak to Pirate Nation. So, fired up to talk about Pirate football.
No doubt about it with us, and we got a very special guest tonight. Looking forward to conversation with him.
Yeah, this guy was a Pirate during the Skip Holtz years and also was GA under Skip. Welcome to the show for the first time, Brett Hickman.
What's up, guys? Appreciate y'all having me.
No doubt about it. We're very excited about Pirate football, and I don't know if you were there, Brett. I was for the spring game. Very excited about I know that we could talk X's and O's, maybe bore some people, but certainly the depth has been one of our strengths now, which was something we couldn't say a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. Coach Houston's come in and has been able to remake the roster in his image. I think his background kind of competing against him when I was at North Greenville and then he was at Lenore Ryan and, of course, the Citadel. And while I was at Gardner-Webb, I've always had a great amount of respect for how he tries to build a football team, which is kind of inside out on the offensive and defensive lines, which is where I think, our program was 2018-ish, 2019, was just not in a position where it could compete consistently in the AAC. So I think you're seeing some major shifts there. I'm excited about what he's been able to do in the portal, with the receivers and as the maturation of these young guys on defense keep going. And I think we're headed. I think he's finally got the roster where he wants it. How does that go with an AAC schedule plus NC State and BYU on the schedule? We'll see from a tangible win-loss perspective, but I think you're going to see a quality football team this fall again.
Yeah, like you were saying, Brett, that's one of the things that Coach Houston said tonight. He said, people all the time are asking, hey, Coach, how are we going to be? How are we going to be? He said, all I can tell you is that the Pirates are going to have a very competitive football team this fall, that we have a chance to compete in every game. And that was anything but the case when my staff and I took over back in December of 2018. That, like you just mentioned, that we were small, that we were slow across the board. We're nowhere near where we need to be in the trenches, but that is no longer the case.
That's right. I really do like, what he's done. I think it's a team that's – I mean, anytime you're 2 and 3 deep along the defensive line and, I think offensive line-wise, with the transfers coming in and the continued maturation of guys like Avery Jones at center and some of those other guys who kind of got thrown in the fire beforehand and getting healthy, I think Bailey Malavik and some of those guys along with the transfers coming in, I think that's a group – because those guys are really going to get coached by Steve Shankweiler, at those two spots. If you're good, you got a chance.
And, Coach, I wanted to ask you about the very fact you played for Coach Holtz, as we're talking about GA for Coach Holtz. Just want to get your thoughts, but with this whole mess we call the NIL, I'm obviously for paying players or having some form of it. But things have gotten way out of hand. Now they're trying, it looks like the NCAA as of last week, this whole thing, we thought we could have a collective, then they're pulling the reins back on that. It's like, once it's out there, it seems like it's too late. Like the old cliche goes, the horse out of the barn.
Yeah, the horse is out of the barn, or we're trying to put toothpaste back in the tube. You use whatever, saying or that you want to say. I think the NCAA, and for that matter, pretty much anyone, scared of lawsuits and litigation. And yeah, I think it's ironic. I did a paper in college and talking about, you know, the first time the NCAA really got hammered by the Supreme Court, which was over the TV deal, you know, back in the 80s. I don't know if all of us are kind of in tune or remember that, but the NCAA had exclusive TV rights. And you could only be on TV, you know, one or two times a year, which is why your Saturdays were, you know, CBS might get one game or NBC might get one game. And then ESPN came along and the Supreme Court said, you can't do that. The school should have the rights to their TVs. And at that point, this thing that we call amateur athletics or whatever, the NCAA, it stopped being just we're going to make our money off of ticket revenue. And when you started getting the TV money and the conferences or whatever, the Power Five or what was the Big Six or whatever started, you know, getting these millions to multi-million dollar TV deals, you know, people started looking at it like, you know, should we have guys who are playing in front of 45,000 people at you know, Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium or 100,000 at Michigan Stadium, you know, they're playing for nothing more than a scholarship. I don't think, I speak as a guy who's 36 years old and spent most of my life in college football. I don't think most people have a problem with a kid profiting off his name, image, and likeness. But I do think the problem is it went from zero to 100 without any regulation. You know, and it got out of hand. And it got out of hand way too quick. And when you didn't put any regulation on it, and you've got some states playing by this set of rules, another state playing by this set of rules, I guess maybe it was naive, maybe it was just laziness, maybe it was whatever. But if you didn't think this was going to become a way to induce recruiting, as it's clearly become, I mean, at the highest levels of college football right now, it's basically bidding for these four and these five-star kids for, well, we can give you this much in NIL. And I think Jimbo Fisher's a great coach. I think he works his tail off. But if you don't think the fact that Texas A&M's got millions upon millions of dollars involved in this had something to do with all of a sudden they're recruiting at a level higher than Alabama and Georgia are, you're crazy. You're insane. So you've got the haves and the have-nots, and they've set up these collectives and everything. You know, they got to get a handle on it to where it's NIL, meaning Holton Ahlers goes and does a commercial for Parker's Barbecue in Greenville, and he gets paid $500 or $1,000. That's fine. But when it started becoming, you know, right away that it became, you know, we'll pay you $25,000 to come to your school, it saturated the market. And some kids are starting to get this idea that they're a junior in high school and they're going to be worth 50 grand or whatever. And what can school X, Y, and Z do for you to get that? Well, number one, the coaches are really not supposed to be kind of orchestrating things. That it's supposed to be on their own. But it's a mess right now. And if they don't do something, and it's a really bad thing, in my opinion, for our school as it relates to East Carolina. I mean, as much as we love it, we're not generating that type of TV revenue. We're not generating, you know, we don't have the fan base that Georgia or Alabama has from a national perspective. And we rely on a few donors to fund our athletic department, you know? So as the case is now, okay, do we put it into I make whatever, I've only got $30,000 a year that I give to my school. So do I take that $30,000 and put it in this NIL collective, which is going to hurt these other Olympic sports, or do I put it back in the athletic department and we suffer in recruiting because we don't have enough NIL money to bring on good basketball and good football players? You know, so it's a, it is an evolving time, and it is a mess from what I've heard from a lot of my buddies that have come through recruiting over the course of the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, now, Brett, before I get to a couple comments that I had, since you brought up, you know, you gave that example, you know, Holton Ahlers, obviously he's had deals with Pirate Radio for one, and then also you have Sup Dogs, such a big deal there in Greenville. I know he has a deal with them as well. But I know Mason Garcia, I know you're on social media. You saw Mason Garcia's commercial with the financial company.
Yeah, I got no problem with that. I mean, I think that's what it's supposed to be about. I do have a problem. I mean, those are guys who, especially in Holton's case, I mean, that guy started over 30 games or 40 games as a college football player. Like, he sets the market. Your starting quarterback kind of sets the market. But when you start dealing with 17 and 18-year-olds who haven't played a high school football game, right, making decisions based on, you know, can you get me commercials? Dude, I don't know if you can crack the depth chart for 3 years, much less am I going to be orchestrating a deal with said businesses behind, you know, whether or not it's legal or not. You know, should I be promising something to a 17 or 18-year-old when I got guys on my roster that are really more deserving of that pot? You know, if that makes sense. So, and if we're not doing it with recruits, are we getting – I mean, what are our competitors in recruiting doing, or as it pertains? I mean, certainly we have the four major ACC schools around here, but I, you know, one thing that's changed a lot, even in the 14 years I've been gone since being at East Carolina, recruiting has become more competitive in this region. Just by you look at App State, which was FCS at the time, Liberty, which was FCS at the time, Charlotte, which I don't even think had started their program yet, no, in 2008 when I left. You've got Old Dominion, who was FCS at the time. You know, the group of five schools that it basically exists from the Mid-Atlantic region down through Georgia, it's such a more saturated and competitive recruiting market. And as, you know, Raleigh-Durham has grown, as Charlotte has grown, as Metro Atlanta has grown, all these areas that have historically been really good to East Carolina, these areas are starting to get hammered by people that were not playing FBS football, you know, 15 years ago. So the idea that we were, you know, really East Carolina set in a great spot for about 30 years being the one kind of power group of five team, if you will, in this region, and it's just simply not the case right now. We got a problem with that as well, because we haven't been as good as we should have been post Ruffin and between, you know, the first couple of years of Coach Houston, and then of course the market just becoming more saturated. So you got a lot of layers to all of this that affect East Carolina in not a great way, in my opinion.
Yeah, to your point, as far as, you know, unproven talent, you know, essentially schools, you know, trying to buy players. I listen to Shane Matthews' podcast on a regular basis, essentially daily, and it's almost a daily topic on his show, the NIL, because there's always something new happening, and, you know, he just thinks it's absolutely ridiculous, you know, for guys like the as a high school quarterback out of California in Tennessee, a marketing company has offered him $8 million. He said that's, and then meanwhile you have Hendon Hooker on campus, who played very well for Tennessee last year, and now what's he getting compared to that $8 million?
Precisely right. And the NCAA's done, if they've done anything, they've done a decent job at trying to get the boosters out of the recruiting over the course of the all the mess that happened in the 80s in the Southwestern Conference with SMU, you know, and those guys, and they've done a decent job. And now you're just asking for people to get involved. And then, you know, case in point, if it's legal for me as a business owner or whatever, you know, I want you to recruit this great kid who plays at West Monmouth High School. I go and watch him every Friday night. He's great. I'm going to give him an NIL deal for $20,000 a year to help you choose East Carolina over Coastal, which is right down the road, or whatever the case is. Well, what's going to keep me in 2 years when he's number two or number three on the depth chart from calling Coach Houston, hey, I helped you get this kid, why is he not playing? You know, and now we got a big problem, because, you know, now coaches can't coach. And I don't think it's gotten to that point. I know it hadn't gotten to that point at Coach Houston, because I think he'd probably tell the booster and anybody else where to stick it. But, you know, we don't need people thinking they're owed something because they put their money in. So, you know, it's a total mess. And the more money that's involved at stake, particularly in the Southeastern Conference, where recruiting has always been a season unto itself. I mean, Florida fired Dan Mullen, guys. I mean, Dan Mullen's a terrific football coach. He got fired because he wasn't recruiting at the same level as Georgia and Alabama. You know, they had just played in the Cotton Bowl. He had played in two New Year's Six games in 3 years, and he got fired just because they weren't winning in February or December or whatever signing day is now. So from a broad picture perspective, doing too much without regulation is causing a bunch of problems right now.
And I think eventually, Brett, things will – it's like a bubble. It'll eventually will burst.
Pop.
I don't know what's going to – yeah, I don't know what's going to happen, but obviously I'm not Nostradamus. You were talking, and you guys can probably help me. What was that Texas kid that went to Ohio State?
Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, he didn't even – yeah, he didn't even – did he even play? I mean, he's like – they gave him like millions of dollars. You know, it's so frustrating to see – like you guys said, the other thing I will tell the players right now.
Well, Dave, very quickly about that young man, Brett, isn't he back at the University of Texas now? Is that right?
Texas, and he didn't play his senior year of high school because the Athletic Association in Texas said that he could not profit off his name, image, and likeness. So that kid gave up. His senior year, which, you know, to any of us that went through that, that's prom, that's graduation, that's all of that to go essentially be a scout team quarterback at Ohio State so he could make a quick million. And then obviously they've got a Heisman, C.J. Stroud maybe is his name. So the kid wasn't going to play at Ohio State, and he just took off and went. I don't blame the kids. I mean, you know, they're just taking advantage of what's given to them. I just don't think this is what the people had in mind when they started talking about NIL.
No, and it's frustrating to me because that very thing, the players better be very careful, and I'll tell you why. Because I want to be fair to, we have a lot of friends that are former players, including Matt, who's on the show with us now. And Matt, if you're here, you can chime in. But Bubba played, you played, like we said, we have nothing against the paying the players, so to speak. The problem is the very fact of what's going to happen is, I can see a scenario right now, especially in SEC, where things are just so – it's the ultimate Wild Wild West in the SEC right now. I can see a scenario right now where a kid's in SEC championship game, he doesn't make that catch. He fumbles the football. Something's going to happen, and they're going to find a way. They'll find a way to get rid of the kid. And most people don't know that scholarships are a year-to-year basis, but I think your scholarship road is a lot better than the road that we're heading down, I'm afraid of, where a kid goes to Alabama. Or the other thing we've heard a lot, which is probably more common even now, where I just take a kid and I'll recruit a kid and I'll be Georgia and I'll take that kid so he doesn't go to Alabama. With all the stuff with now they're not going to have scholarships or the limits on scholarships, all kinds of crazy stuff that I never thought I would see happen is happening. The death penalty the SMU got now is okay. You can do that. So I just wonder, why do we have – I would ask the NCAA, why do we have any rules now? You know, if you're going back to the NIL also, when you were talking about – I never usually say Congress should be involved, but there should be one national rule or rules period when it comes to NIL across the board, and that would be a lot more fair than state by state.
Well, there's got to be an umbrella that oversees, and to me, even at the high school level, you know, and we have these in these coaches' meetings, like, you guys have to understand that football's different. It's different than women's soccer. It shouldn't be governed under the same umbrella that football is governed by at any level. You know, for instance, the hand that feeds in East Carolina or NC State or, you know, Southern California is football and men's basketball. And football is the biggest one by far. And then at a few places, baseball, particularly in the SEC, you know, it plays a role in that. But I think we're heading towards some type of break where division. Now, I'm hoping it's not just the SEC and the Big Ten and 40 other schools where it's a power league. I think you could make it work where it's 80 or 90 schools that are willing to do it, with East Carolina being one of those, breaking off and basically creating their own calendar and let the NCAA still handle you know, the eligibility center and that, but, you know, the recruiting's different. The calendar needs to be different. NIL legislation needs to be different. And, you know, what the other thing that's being affected because of all this, because football's factored into Title IX, is other male sports are being cut more rapidly because, you know, you've got to have equality, you know, and when football's involved, you know, women's sports take up a lot of the rest of the budget, which is great and fine, but there's so many issues that we got to tackle. And like the portal stuff, you know, that's a thing into itself, but who's going to be the governing body for the next, because I think it's going to happen. I really do. I think we're looking at a different college football in 10 years and how are they going to legislate all of these things? Because you're right. Nothing's getting legislated right now.
Hey, now it's funny you bring that up as a good segue to a point I was going to bring up that Coach Houston as well as John Gilbert were talking about tonight at the Pirate Armada, and that is just the deregulation of the NCAA. He said, quite frankly, and he being John Gilbert, you know, to put it simply, the NCAA is tired of being sued, and so you're going to see conferences have their rules that they're going to be playing by, and it'll go from there, as you're saying.
It's coming. I mean, the SEC's playing by a different set of rules right now, and you're playing by a different set of rules even within your own league based on your state laws. So until we get something that comes from Congress or a governing body of what's right with NIL, what's right with the portal, I mean, the NCAA is so screwed up. Thanks to the roster management due to COVID is a major issue. I mean, you tell me as a head coach that I get 85 scholarships, but all 85 of those guys get one extra year, whether or not they played or not. You know, a bunch of kids played college football in 2020, and they still all got extra years. So what am I going to do to get back below that 85 within a year? Well, what's happening is these guys are pushing the kids to the portal. And you can't blame the coaches. I mean, they got 102 guys on scholarship and they got to get rid of 17 of them. So, you know, again, a reactive move, you know, now you're talking about you got to get below the 85, but now we're going to get rid of scholarship limitations within the next 4 or 5 years. So I don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. And they're so tired of being law, they're tired of being sued, and they're tired of being a pinata, so they're not doing anything. And you know, I guess bad leadership would be better than no leadership at all. But you know, it is. I'm right now. I told Tripp Weaver, who's the East Carolina safety coach, was in our school today, and Tripp and I have known each other going back 15 years. I don't envy what those guys are going through recruiting wise. I don't envy what their summer calendar looks like now by official visits and the portal. I mean, they've got official visits for the next 6 Saturdays in what should be camp season, kind of downtime, not downtime, but, you know, refresh your batteries going into a football season. It's a hard time to be a coach. It's a hard time to do that job.
Yeah. And Brett, first of all, this is Matt Semenza. Nice to meet you. I love the work that you do on 247. So it's a pleasure to meet you. You know, I think I like the way you took this conversation. That's actually where I was going to go. We had Coach Houston on the show a few weeks ago, and he talked about exactly this problem of, you know, the fact that the NCAA, they granted the extra year with COVID, but they really didn't have the ability to look 2 and 3 steps ahead. And that is the ramifications that came from this. And, you know, it put these college coaches in an awful situation where they essentially had to cut people from the team. And I'm sure that had to be, those conversations have to be extremely difficult as a coach when you're essentially pushing a player that you recruited less than 24 months ago into the transfer portal. That's got to be a brutal conversation for a college coach. So I don't envy what these coaches are going through at all. At the same time, there are situations, and nobody will really talk about this, But there are situations where you might have, and every team has them, maybe 5 to 7 scholarship players who simply aren't cutting their weight. You know, maybe they're not, they don't have work ethic in place. Maybe they're just not picking up the scheme. Maybe they just were, the evaluation coming out of high school was just off. So now this is a way to essentially cut kids. And it's just, like you said, I don't think the NCAA had a plan. They didn't look 2 and 3 steps ahead to see what, you know, I really believe what they should have done was had a tiered system. So, you know, you have to get back down to 85. Well, we're going to give you 3 years to do it. So the first year you have to be down to, let's just say, you know, 88, then 87, then we're going to get you down to 85. It had to be structured in a way where it was realistic, and they just didn't have the vision to be able to do that.
No, I mean, it, once again, NIL went from 0 to 100, and now we're trying to go from 100 back to stopped. You know, I mean, you're exactly right, and that's the way it should have been done. I mean, if you had 105 in 2021 or whatever that was, it should have gone back to 100, then the 95, and then the 9. Because the other residual effect that nobody's talking about, at my level, these guys are taking less high school kids per year. You know, they're not, because it's easier to for me to say, I'm going to go and recruit a kid who's played 2 years of FCS football that's already put on those 25 pounds. In a lot of ways, the portal's made it a whole lot easier to just say, screw high schools, you know, and I'm not saying that East Carolina's doing that at all. I don't mean that. But, you know, there's, I need a plug and play roster guy, but a lot of these guys are going, they're signing 15, 20 guys, you know, out of the portal, and then they're taking 7 or 8 to 12 high school kids. Like, I mean, and we've got a really good senior class coming up that is not FBS kids, but kids that are going to be borderline FCS scholarship Division II kids, you know, 3 or 4 at least. And everybody's saying, well, we got about 8 spots this year. We've got 11, as opposed to, you know, the cap was usually around, most people were taking 22, 23 a year. So, you know, what, from a guy who spent his entire full-time coaching career at the FCS and Division II level, those guys are going to get better high school players than they've ever got, because the East Carolinas of the world and the Charlottes and the Coastal Carolinas and the App States of the world are taking the Power 5 portal kids, or they're plucking the best players from FCS to supplement their roster, or vice versa. East Carolina is going to get a better high school player than they've ever gotten before, because whatever, you know, South Carolina is recruiting, they're taking portal kids. They're taking Spencer Rattler instead of taking Mason Garcia, you know, if that makes any sense. So it's a different day and age of roster management, and it's a different day and age of where East Carolina, as a lifelong Pirate, to me, our thing was always, we're going to Williamston, or we're going to Rocky Mount. We're going to take that kid who hadn't eaten, and he's 185 pounds. By God, he's 6'4", and he's going to be 235 when he gets 3 meals in his life. And that dude's going to be a dude in 4 years. Well, they're not giving the coaches that long now, so you can't blame the coaches. But, you know, that's changed. East Carolina is no longer going to be the old school Eastern North Carolina developmental program that it was. It's going to be a portal and get better high school players than they've ever got, because the other guys are going to the portal. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, we'll just have to see if it works. But nobody on Hoist the Colors is willing to give any coach 5 years. I mean, I do know that. So to be the way it was. And
I'm a basketball coach anyway.
I understand that.
Five years. A lot of those people are done after 2 years.
Yeah.
And Brett, make a great point. I was just going to make one quick point, Bob. I'm sorry. I was just going to say that to your point real quick, there's no more Rudy's on the team anymore. There's no guy that loved East Carolina. He's very close. He's kind of like one of those guys you're not quite sure, but hey, if we get Big John in the weight room and we'll coach him up, and he's a 2-star kid that has a huge heart, and with his work ethic, he can be a 3 or 4-star kid, no doubt about it. So I agree with you 100%. And guys, Bubba, I knew you had something, but I wanted to add to that.
Just what Brett mentioned, as far as, you know, guys that are undersized, and have that frame, add the weight. You know, you look at a guy that was one of Brett's teammates, C.J. Wilson. C.J. Wilson was a high school running back, and then all of a sudden, you know, he comes to East Carolina and he turns himself hard and so on and so forth into a guy that played in the NFL for a substantial amount of time and became one of the best defensive linemen East Carolina's ever had.
Yep. I don't know if today and age, I don't know if C.J. Wilson or Pernell Griffin or, you know, name them. I don't know if those guys get recruited now. I don't. I think a lot of those guys wind up playing FCS football.
And that's very sad because one of the things, going back to what you were saying earlier, one of the things that will help us recruiting is, as simple as it may sound, is simply winning. I think that's one of the things that's helped us. I think that there's a lot of kids in the 252 and the 910 where you are. There's a lot of kids in Eastern North Carolina. The reason why they didn't stay here, Brett, is we were not winning. I know some of those kids were going to go to the big, really, really big schools in SEC. But as far as right now, the problem we've been facing is A, we were not winning, and B, we didn't have the facilities, something we can talk about later in the show, but something we're way behind on is the indoor practice facility.
Yep.
You can start naming a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't have. And even Coach Houston's talked about, people can easily recruit against that, against us, and with the NIL, and how much money you're going to pay me. All that stuff we've been talking about is easy to recruit against East Carolina for those reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that. And I think recruiting by itself has become less regional. Huddle and film and, you know, those things are a lot more accessible to everybody else. And like I said earlier, our area, when I talk about our greater region, the Mid-Atlantic Southeast region, has become kind of oversaturated. So it's not uncommon for a kid from New Bern or Wilmington or whatever to bypass going to school in North Carolina to go, you know, to Old Dominion or Liberty or whatever. And I think you have a responsibility as a high school coach, and we've been lucky to have, you know, two FBS kids in the last 4 years, which is a lot for our place. You know, the only thing that I ever said, and Javian chose East Carolina, and he's portaling right now, and then Carter Wyatt chose to go to Duke. I do think as a North Carolina public school employee and a public school teacher, I said, guys, if a public school in this state recruits you and it's on par with the other offers you got, go visit them. You know, and I don't think we've got a lot of high school coaches doing that anymore. You know, Javian got recruited by App. He got recruited by Charlotte. He got recruited by East Carolina. Carter had the same three schools, I guess. You know, go visit all of them. And then if you want to go somewhere, you know, for instance, Javian came down to East Carolina and Liberty, and Carter came down to Duke and Georgia Tech, and App State was actually his group of five kind of choice, if you will, you know, over ECU and Charlotte. But I do think we have an obligation, but I don't think a lot of high school coaches think like that. I think they're either totally hands-on or they've got some kind of skin in the game that they, you know, you got to go to where it's going to help us look the best. And I don't care. I mean, it's not my life, but I do think, you know, as a public school employee, and I'm not going to push my alma mater because I love it. I'm going to push it because, you know, I think they do right by our kids and they go. So, you know, we got to do our job as high school coaches to at least get our kids to visit these schools in state that are doing it, doing right by them. You know, that's my opinion.
Yeah, guys. And I just wanted to jump in and make a point about the portal really quick. You know, one of the things that I found interesting, just starting now that we're a few years into this, you're starting to see some data come out. And I don't recall the exact percentage, but I saw a number that like roughly 50% of these kids that go into the portal now are actually not finding a new home.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be really interesting. The more data that comes out over the next few years, it's going to be very telling. And I actually think what you could see, and what I'm actually hoping for, is that you're going to see fewer kids go into the portal because they realize that the grass isn't always greener. You know what I mean? And as people become more educated, right, coaches will start to see this data. It'll trickle down to the players. And, hey, you know, maybe the grass isn't always greener. I'm going to go into the portal, but guess what? There's a good chance I'm not going to find a new home. I might be better off staying where I'm at. So that's one thing to keep an eye on. The other thing, and I just say this just, you know, this is just my own personal opinion, and I guess call me old school, call me a college football traditionalist, but I hate what this is teaching young people. I really do. I hate it from the standpoint that, you know, you have a little adversity, maybe for the first time in your life. You know, when you're at your high school program, you're all state, you're the best kid on the team. And then you go to college and there's a pecking order and you need to earn it. And I hate that, you know, a little adversity comes along and guess what? You know what? I'm going to go into the portal. And that's not all the kids. I mean, a lot of them are, for whatever reason, things just don't work out. But I do think there's a large percentage of kids that for the first time in their life, they're dealing with some adversity and they don't know how to handle it. And the reaction is, hey, I'm just going to go into the portal. And I hate that. I really do, because it's just not a good life lesson. And I don't want to go on and on about life lessons and whatnot, but it's just from a, you know, standpoint of being sort of a traditionalist. I just don't like it.
You're spot on. I mean, I think one thing I see in high school coaching and with parents, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all. I don't want it to be taken, but like the delusion that your kid's a little bit better than he really is, or, you know, kids, we had it at the FCS level a lot. It's like, well, why didn't I get a group of five offer, or why am I not playing? Or, you know, our kids at Division II all thought they were FCS players. And we had guys at East Carolina that, you know, yeah, a few of you, Linville Joseph could have played anywhere in the country, but the reality is not everybody that we had was, you know, SEC good. And, you know, a lot of these kids are hopping in the portal, like we talked about earlier, where they're getting pushed in, or they want to go down a level and they want a chance to play because they realize they can't cut it at that level, which is fine. It's the guys that are jumping in the portal from East Carolina thinking they're going to get 10 SEC offers right off the bat. You know, that's the disillusion that you just can't deal with. Like, and those are the kids that they jump in the portal from school A and then they get nothing and they end up having, when they really are an FBS player, but they've got to go down to FCS or whatnot because they're not as good as their mom and daddy or, you know, their handler or whatever think they are. But, you know, in the case of, you know, like our guy who's in the portal right now, Javian just wants to play, you know, and he realizes he's got a loaded depth chart in front of him. He's going to go down to FCS and he'll probably have a chance. That's the way it should be. But he gave it, like you said, Matthew, it's been 2 years. He gave it 2.5 years. You know, that's a different deal. You know, like you've been sitting.
Right. That's right.
You know, but like these guys who are, you're not supposed to play in October of your true freshman year. Like you're an 18-year-old boy, dude. You know, going up against grown men every day. Like, you're not supposed to play. That's what I used to tell our freshmen. And if you do, consider yourself extraordinarily fortunate. And, you know, so I agree with you completely. And like we talked about earlier, the coaches are complicit in this too, you know, and either by NCAA doing or it's just become too convenient for them to say, screw that, we're not going to worry about developing a kid over the course of 2 or 3 years when I can go get a ready-made product. Like, why do I want to make my own ingredients or grow my own ingredients if I can get HelloFresh right there and it just tells me to pop something in the microwave or whatever I've got to do? But it is less work to coach a 21-year-old than it is to develop an 18-year-old. And I get it. Your job's on the line every Saturday. So there is no simple answer to all of it. There is a lot of layers to why kids are transferring or whatnot. I will say this on that data and dealing with Javian's situation, linemen are fine. You know, if it's an FBS lineman who enters the portal, they're going to find a spot to play. But those skill kids, they're a dime a dozen. Like wide receivers, DBs, linebackers, those guys, they're the ones who are getting left out the most. But a big offensive lineman or a defensive lineman who's got some talent, they're finding spots.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, you know, that you know, that you've now seen that, Brett, and you've had a chance to dive into that data. And I think that that will at least give kids the opportunity to make an educated decision, you know, and not a decision that's just driven by emotion or adversity. Hey, like, you know, when the data is behind it, it will help. So I really hope that it does lead to, you know, at least just stop the bleeding a little bit, slow it down. You know, but a kid like Javion, I agree. I mean, he gave it a few years, you know, he wanted a better situation. And I think it's great for that type of situation. I really do. But where I'll tell you guys, and I won't mention any names, but where it gets me is, you know, a kid steps onto campus, he's got two good players in front of him and doesn't get to play within his first month on campus. And then you have, you know, some family members and friends on social media, you know, blasting the coaches and basically, you know, talking about that he's going to transfer because he's not playing right away. I mean, that kind of stuff, it just drives me nuts. It really does.
Yeah. Kind of along those same lines, Matt, like you said, I won't get too specific with it, but you know, in recent seasons, in the Mike Houston era, we had a defensive back transfer in from an SEC school. And then, you know, he left us, entered the portal and transferred back to an SEC school. And then I saw, you know, he was gone from that SEC school. So it was just a mess. But I'm sure you guys know who I'm referencing. But, yeah, it's just like yep. you were saying, Brad, if somebody's playing as a true freshman, it's because they're an exception and they're just extremely good. Or it's a situation like East Carolina was in 2017 and 2018 where we're depleted and getting our brains beat in.
Yep. That's right. I mean, like if this Lampley kid that's getting rave reviews right now from the staff, you know, that's the D tackle. If he can crack that depth chart right now with Elijah Morris and Rick DeBrew and, you know, all those guys in front of them, you know, that have proven they can play in the AAC, more power to you, brother. But that shouldn't happen. You know what I'm saying? That's not supposed to happen. He's supposed to be – we had a saying, you know, when I was at Gardner-Webb, we wanted to keep those kids in the smokehouse. You know, if you take the meat out too quick, it's tough. You know, you want to let it be tender when it comes out. But if he's already a better piece of brisket, then you can let him play. But, you know, that's hopefully he's better than what we got. Because if he is, he's a freaking dude.
I'm glad you brought J.D. Lampley up because Coach Houston, when talking about J.D. during spring ball, I guess this is right after spring ball concluded, he said, going back to my first year, J.D. would have been starting for us every game. But now we're just weighing it out. As good as he was this spring, will he play enough snaps in the fall to make it worth burning that year, or will we just use him in four games or less so he doesn't lose a year?
Yep, that's a good problem, in my opinion.
We're getting to that point, guys, where we're talking about wins. Well, now with the depth, when you look at offensive and defensive line, is really it's the best it's been in probably since your era, I would think, Brett. I mean, it's been a good while for sure, or maybe in the Ruffin years. But the offensive line is good, and you know we've got great running backs. Like every position you can start naming, there's the depth at East Carolina, and I think – overall, I really believe that we have a shot, an outside shot to even compete for a championship this year. You never know what's going to happen with football, with injuries, or what's going to happen. But I think that the talent is there. You've got, you know, it's a shame like a kid like Tyler Snead leaves, but you understand why he does. He's signed with the Steelers. But when you look at it on paper, we're set. We're stacked. You look at the quarterback position, you're hoping to get another year. I'm really glad that I was right. Oh, by the way, I told you so. We had a lot of former players and fans who said Mason Garcia was going to transfer. And I'm glad you were talking about kids that have waited. You talk about a kid that's worked on his academics. He's working on learning the system. There were a lot of former players that didn't understand. He really didn't know the playbook as well as Holt Naylor's. And going back to what you said earlier, here's a kid who he could have transferred. He's a great four-star kid, just like Holt Naylor's is. But he's paying his dues, and he's going to be a really good player, a really good quarterback at East Carolina And here's a kid who waited, and he's going to get his turn.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're right across the line. We actually played Carolina Forest on the schedule. I waited until Mason left to do that, which I think is, I mean, they're still pretty good. But I've seen him up close and live. There is no question the raw talent, you know, but you have to – so many words, you know, when we get into these discussions or whatever on Hoist the Colors on, you know, we're not playing very well here. I like to remind people you're not at practice every day, and you don't know how much of the Rolodex the kid can handle yet. And they were obviously having to bring him along. I mean, just going back to that Navy game that he had to play a lot during the, I guess that was the 2020 season. I mean, that was a shell of the entire offense. And, you know, he's another one. We've been able, thanks to the COVID year, to be able to nurture him, allow him to grow in practice before he is exposed in front of 45,000 people. And at that position, confidence is so vital. It is so important. And you want a guy, when he goes out there, that he's ready to perform. Now, he might be thrust upon this year, either through injury. Hopefully Holton can stay healthy, or you know, we've sputtered a little bit at times over the course of the last couple of years, and maybe having a backup that's capable of coming in now. I do think that the offense took off a little bit more toward the end of the year because there was a little bit more less reluctance to run Holton, because you know, they felt better about Mason. And whenever you got to play 11 on 11 instead of 11 on 10, that's even better. So two quarterbacks is a really good thing, and a ready-made Mason Garcia in 2023 is big for the future of the program.
Brett, I have to chime in really quick, because I think you make a great point and about running Holton. And this is something that I've been talking about for a few years, and it's, I think that, in my opinion, when you look at who Holton is as a quarterback, he's a guy who, he's not, I don't see him as your traditional pocket quarterback. I see him as a guy that's athletic. He can make plays with his feet. I think he can present a lot more challenges to the defense when he is running effectively. And it's something that I've really been calling for. Now, obviously, you know, the flip side to that is, when you don't have a backup who's ready, you're going to be a little more hesitant to run the quarterback. And so to the point, I'm hoping that, you know, next year that we have Mason Garcia, you know, he's another year of development, another spring ball, another fall camp. I'm hoping that we can unleash Holton a little more and just let him use his feet, let him be a playmaker, because I just think it opens so much up and it presents a lot more challenges to the defense.
No doubt. On that note, I mean, and I've had this argument with fellow coaches, a quarterback can defend a guy like Holton that's that big. He can defend himself more as a runner with the football than he can behind a patchwork offensive line, as he's had the first couple of years he was there, you know. So, I mean, the guy's over 235 pounds, and I know he's a little bit leaner than he was, but like, when he gets downhill, not really worried about the contact that he can defend himself.
Hey, ask that Memphis linebacker, right?
No, ain't no bad. He's a big dude.
He chucked that kid. Yeah. But yeah, Johnny Gardner chimes in on Facebook regarding the recruitment of the portal. So that's something I know you've certainly seen film on those guys to some degree, maybe some more so than others. But obviously the positions of wide receiver and offensive line were of significant need. And Coach Houston and staff, you know, on the offensive line, you bring in Justin Redd from Norfolk State, a guy who was the best lineman in the MEAC, and then also you know, your young man from up at West Virginia, who was out of Mallard Creek, and then also also a guy that was very proven and did some nice things at Marist. And then receiver wise, you got a proven guy in Isaiah Winstead who had played for Coach Latrell Scott at Norfolk State. And then you have Jalen Johnson, who played for the national champions and played significant snaps for them, even though he didn't catch a lot of balls. And then also, obviously, Jarrett Garner coming in from Duke.
Yeah, no doubt. I do think, not that I'm experts on these guys that are coming in. I mean, I know who they are and obviously what their accomplishments were. But it does also, the fact that they've been so aggressive in recruiting receivers and linebackers, that they're not entirely confident in inside linebackers, for that more specifically, that they're not entirely confident with, I guess, the younger guys on their roster. You know, I think supplementing, particularly at the receiver position, I think without, you know, Tyler was clearly your go-to, and then obviously CJ's had his own set of issues, and, you know, though it looks like might be on the bench back, and then Audie and Koshy had a good year, but that offense is receivers away, you know, because I think it's a, as the O-line's gotten better, and I think, you know, we've hit enough on the quarterback situation, the engine or the oil that makes that engine go is those two tailbacks. And if you can continue to loosen up the box because you got some guys who can make some plays down the field, you know, with a strong offensive line and those two tailbacks, the sky's the limit for the offense. But they needed to, they need to hit those guys in the receiver. And then, you know, an inside linebacker, you lose Bruce Bivens and you lose Aaron Ramsey. You know, getting some experience in there that's played a little bit is important, but they also, they need Miles Berry to take a lead. They need David Smith to take a lead and play their best football in their last years of eligibility.
Now, receivers, I want to see what you think about this, Brett, but on the few minutes of film I did see on Isaiah Winstead, both from Norfolk State and during his time at Toledo, with him being a bigger receiver, 6'2", 6'3", 215 or 20 pounds, reminds me a lot of Trayvon Brown.
Yeah, I'm a big physical kid. There's two ways to stretch the field. Either you can go on top of somebody and grab it, or you can run by them. I do think talent-wise, I think the guy that they've got that can actually run by people is Josiah Hatfield. Now, he's, for whatever reason, he hasn't hit the level that I think he can hit. You know, maybe without Tyler, he gets to play in the slot a little bit more, you know, where that might be a little bit more keen to his size. But he is a guy who I think can run by people down the field. But Winstead's the guy that can sit, you know, he's the guy who can go and get the 50-50 ball and turn the 50-50 ball into a 70-30 ball, you know, where the offense is either going to come down with it or it's going to be an incomplete pass. And when CJ's at his best, he's that guy too. So, you know, if you line up two guys who can do that on the edge, plus Ryan Jones and Shane Calhoun, who have proven that they can catch, you know, tough balls over the middle, you start to look a little bit different offensively, because I think we feel pretty good with the two tailbacks. Now, we've also been incredibly fortunate that neither one of those guys have gotten banged up. Knock on wood, you don't want to see it, because that's usually a spot where you deal with some injuries overall. But on offense, if Winstead is as good as advertised and we get the best version of C.J. Johnson, it's going to be a good group. It's going to be a fun group to watch. It's going to be the most fun we've had watching a Pirate offense since Lincoln Riley was calling the plays. I really believe that.
And, you know, Brett, one of the, you mentioned the guy that to me, exactly the receiver to me, C.J. Johnson, I think is going to have a good year. I think he knows coach, if he wanted to, he could have kicked him off the team, never let him come back on. Everybody loves C.J. He's just done some foolish, childish stuff, I think, from my understanding, but nothing to the point of where it would break the integrity of the team. But as far as you were talking about Josiah Hatfield, he, to me, is the X factor on this team at wide receiver, because CJ, I think, will have a good year. He's I mean, he will or he won't, but I feel like he will. But Josiah Hatfield, this is his chance to really star, be a star. He is a star. I don't know if he believes in himself or what the issue is, but he's definitely got the raw talent. And I tell you, the difference between winning and losing games, it could come down to there's a lot of 50-50 games on the schedule. Everybody can say BYU, NC State's going to be tough, but there's a lot of games that you can look at the schedule right now that could go either way. It's a catch or two away from winning or losing. It's that razor thin, like a margin of victory is that close. And so it's going to take guys like that to make the big plays. I hate to say that. It sounds so obvious, but it's a Hatfield. It's a C.J. Johnson. It might be Mitchell, Keaton Mitchell, one of the guys in the backfield. But it's something like that that's going to be the difference in winning and losing. And it, at least we're at that point now where we're building the program where before we were losing by 20 or 30.
Yeah, the number one indicator of who wins a football game other than turnovers and obviously points. I mean, I know somebody's going to chime in on the chat and tell me points are what dictates who wins. Thanks a lot. When you look at stats, I've always said two things, turnovers and explosive plays. And for explosive plays, I'm talking runs over 12 and passes over 15. You know, if you've got guys who can make plays past people and you've got a defense who doesn't give up explosive plays and you make offenses execute all the way down the field by nature and you take care of the football, you're going to win games. And to me, Keaton Mitchell, who's one of the most explosive players. I'm not saying this is a pirate homer. PFF says it. Everybody, the guy's an explosive player. If we can get that from just Cy on the edge, then, it could be really fun.
Brett, let me ask you a question. Just schematically, we really don't, when you look at this offense and what we do, and it's really interesting to me because, you know, during your time here with Coach Holtz, and then you look at, when Lincoln was here, we were very good at running wide receiver screens. Perimeter blocking, I think, was outstanding. I think that was a really strong part of our game. And something that this offense doesn't really do, or actually I could probably count on one hand how many times we've run a wide receiver screen in the last few years. But I personally, I think that's something that could help the offense a little bit, go into more like a little bit more of a perimeter wide receiver screen look, just to sort of mix things up a little bit. Is there any reason why we don't utilize that? Is it just purely a scheme thing? Is it personnel? Like, is that something you've observed, Brett?
Yeah, I think two things. There were two types of screens that I would say, you know, going back to the Skip era was kind of the early adoption of the kind of behind the line of scrimmage RPOs, the bubbles and the smoke screens out to the edge receivers and flip it out to Dwayne Harris, let him circle the defense and get 8 yards and it could turn into a 50-yard play. I mean, people were still throwing bubbles, but they're not throwing them as much. And I'll tell you what's happened, you know, COVID gave me a lot of time to watch a lot of football, and particularly in the AAC and the Big 12, you're getting a lot more cloud coverage concepts, not to get too technical, but you know, you've got hard corners out there, press corners, or you've got people who are playing more backer force with the Sam nickel outside of the bubble. So the bubble doesn't leverage people as well as it used to maybe 10 or 15 years ago. As far as what Lincoln did, you know, and I thought he was just obviously he's gone on to be considered maybe the best offensive mind in all of football, not just college football, but you know, the various the tunnel screens, the dual screens, the jailbreaks, all of those things that he did. I know if I think of a football and offense as a menu, the menu's only got so much room. So if I'm going to be really good at screens, at that point, Lincoln was not very diverse in his run game. You know, for instance, when he was at East Carolina, there was a little fold play and there was a zone play. He didn't get in all the counter and the power and all that stuff before. So, I haven't watched as much Oklahoma and of course now Southern Cal film. So I don't know if he's still doing the same things he did at East Carolina. But I know those guys ain't going to take off that half a page. That's the air raid pass plays, because that's kind of who those guys are. But I think they got a lot more into the screen game at East Carolina because the run game wasn't very diverse, and it gave them an example. But I've been searching for – I think the one qualm I've had – qualm's probably a strong word. We have not hung our hat on one particular run scheme. You know, I think in 2020 we were better at like a pin pull or a you know, some outside zone. This year we seem to be a little bit more heavy on the inside zone and a little bit of counter and quarterback draw. But are we trying to do too much in that? You know, because if you're going to do something, you got to take something away. But yeah, it could help us. It could absolutely help us. I mean, you know, you would have never heard me say we get Tyler Snead the football enough. And the screen game was certainly a way that he could have touched it even more than he did over the course of the years. And he got it plenty. I'm not – certainly not a referendum on me calling Donnie out or anything like that. But that was a great way to get Dwayne Harris the football more. You know, where he got it. He got it plenty of times with Todd. And then Lincoln and Ruffin's first year, you know, by God, I felt like he got the football every play. And, you know, I do think from – I think we get away from this as football coaches some, and I know this is a long-winded answer, but before we start thinking about formations and plays, you got to think players first. And if you got a dude, I don't care what you run, you find multiple ways to get that dude the football. And we've got a kid at West Brunswick right now who's a slot, very similar to – I mean, a high school version of a Tyler Snead, a little guy. And we got to do more. And it can't just be jets and downfield passing. We got to get him the ball more in the screen game or various ways in the drop back game to get him the ball. So players, then plays and formations, if that answers it.
Yeah, no, thanks for expanding on that. It's just something I've observed over the years. And I think as a defensive player playing against teams who would present that look, it's almost like play action in a sense that it's giving you something to bite on. It's giving you something to think about and to, you know, come downhill and attack as a defender. And then you can – it does lead to, you know, hopefully plays over the top as well. So just an observation. I just like to see us run a little more of that stuff. But, hey, listen, Donnie forgot more football than I know. So I'm not knocking him at all. But I do think, you know, the incorporating that would be helpful. For the offense.
And I think the average fan, Matt, who watches it on Sunday, particularly the NFL, those guys are so good at the screen game. Like, they are so good. And I for some reason in college football, the screen game in general just is not as good across the board. And I know we see things through the lens of every mistake that East Carolina makes, but I don't think anybody runs them enough.
That's a good point.
Kind of switching gears a little bit, Brandon Forbush chimed in on YouTube talking about the ACC's thoughts on scheduling and said it might end up doing the 3-5-5 scheduling model where each team has three permanent opponents each year and the other teams rotate. You know, what are your thoughts or do you have any on that, Brett?
Yeah, I mean, I think the division stuff has kind of run its course. I think it's ridiculous. I think I read an article like, Florida State has not gone to Virginia Tech in 11 years or something ridiculous like that. Or, you know, North Carolina has not gone to Louisville since they joined the league in 2013. Or Duke and NC State have played like twice in the last 10 years. Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's just – so anything they can do to make opponents make games happen – that fans want to see, you know, the better it is. And I thought about how it would work in the AAC. I mean, I would imagine when this realignment takes hold that East Carolina and Charlotte will somehow be paired together either in the same division or as permanent rivals, even though I know we've never played a football game before with them. Yeah. But, you know, who are going to be our three that we play every year and then who are going to be the 10 that rotate, you know, I guess we'll see. I do think you got, you know, the ACC is a little bit more of a longstanding conference where, you know, at least the core of the league has been together 9 or 10 years. So you've got games that make sense You know, Clemson and Georgia Tech, for instance, have played every year, so they're probably going to continue. You know, State and Carolina have played every year despite being in other divisions, so you could make a lot of it work. But in the AAC, I mean, it's going to be, I would imagine, Charlotte, and then, God, for our coach's sake, I hope Navy's not one of them. That's all I hope.
I knew you were going to say that, the very fact. But by the way, Matt, everybody here on the show is not a fan of Charlotte being with us every single year. I understand proximity, but actually, you know, Brett, we think that those guys are like the rich kids where they haven't, speaking of not earning anything, just because of the market size they are, they had no program, and all of a sudden now they're automatically up to the AAC. But they definitely are very good in basketball. We give them that, and baseball. But the football thing is something. I know, Matt, let me ask you a question real quick. When East Carolina and has to go to Charlotte, are you going to – I know Bubba will be at the game because that's like 30 minutes away. But what about you? Are you going to come down and heckle them for hours?
No, I'll never step foot in that stadium. And to be honest,
Matt, you wouldn't be able to get a ticket anyway, probably, because it only seats 15,000. So,
yeah. Well, guys, just look out for this. If anybody ever mentions on social media that Charlotte is a rival, I will not only will I. It's going to be a war. It's going to be a verbal war, because I am not accepting Charlotte as a rival. Just look at East Carolina. We came up the hard way. I mean, we have fought for decades to get to where we're at, and I just hate to see, because they're in a large market, that all of a sudden they're here. So they don't get much respect from me.
that whole market thing now, that was a cable thing, and everybody's cutting the cord on cable. And I just need to know, and guys, I have to be an independent. They recruit my kids too, so I'm not going to say anything bad about their program or their team. But, like, how many people on Saturday? I mean, if you live in Charlotte, you're a Clemson fan, or you're a State fan, or Virginia Tech's probably got a bunch of – I mean, there's probably more
– West Virginia.
West Virginia. Gosh, when they played Tennessee there a couple of years ago, I thought the whole state of West Virginia was in – Charlotte. But there are more Carolina and State and East Carolina and
App State
grads in Charlotte than that care about football than Charlotte fans. But you know, I think that I know the big market thing's a big thing, but I still think the best college football environments are always going to be in college towns. You know, I don't think that's ever going to change.
Right. I mean, and I know the conference came into existence at a different time, but I mean, you look at the SEC, I mean, you know, with Starkville, with Oxford, with College Station, with Fayetteville, Arkansas, etc. I mean, it's just Gainesville, Florida. I mean, these are college towns. I mean, you can probably go through, there are very few programs in your major markets that you know, are your better teams. I mean, you look at Penn State and State College, and yeah, you have USC that's in LA, but they're more the exception than the norm, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where you got to give State some credit over the course. And I realize Raleigh's gotten a lot bigger as they've grown, but I mean, you got to give State some credit, because despite being in a metropolitan area, you know, they've prided themselves on being a college sports kind of environment. And Carter Finley, when they're good, is a great environment in football and of course basketball. So I mean, you got to get, and South Carolina too, for that matter, because Columbia is a little bit more metropolitan than some of these other places. But like, I remember going to UAB, you guys will probably remember this, in 07, and it was Thanksgiving Saturday or Thanksgiving Friday night. And we were playing at Old Legion Stadium. That guy's done a phenomenal job getting that thing back going. I mean, they've done a great job with that new stadium and everything. But back then, guys, it was probably 15 or 20 degrees, and that stadium is supposed to hold 80,000. I sat in the press box before the game. I went up, and I said, Tim Carter was our other GA on defense. I said, I bet there ain't 200 people in this crowd right now. And I counted – And 10 minutes before kickoff, there were 187 people in the crowd at UAB. Now, you
now, told, now you Brett, know, was that 08 you said?
Yeah, it was our first championship, 08.
Yeah, I was at that ball game. And my buddy and I, when we walked in, I said, I feel like I'm in a dream right now. I said, we're at this huge stadium, and it's just something that makes no sense. I mean, like you said, there were more people on the sideline than there were in the seats. It was just so surreal.
Yeah, it was. And we played like it. I mean, it was such a sterile environment. I mean, we played awful. We found
it was like 17-13, and we scored at the very end.
Brandon Simmons scored late. And, you know, but it was just – it's not college football as it was meant to be played. That's for sure.
No doubt. I wanted to ask you as far as they unveiled last Thursday, the Pirates Unite Capital campaign. Thankfully, one of the things when we started this podcast, we've been begging for over 4 years now, and we finally have a $60 million capital campaign to help out with the biggest part, obviously, the indoor practice facility. I haven't met anybody yet that doesn't want that. When you look at the renovation dimensions, all the stuff for Cliff, for baseball, just want to get your take on that. And after this campaign, we've got to have one thing. I'll tell the administration, great that we have it, but you got to be thinking down the road 5 and 10 years, even beyond this. If not, we'll get further and further behind.
Oh, from a football perspective, it's a total game changer. Not the right word, game leveler, if you will. It does level the playing. It does level the playing field substantially. I was having a conversation with, a guy at church tonight who's also a big Pirate, a big alum, season ticket holder. Yeah, I don't think we've had worse timing in terms of, like, inflation and all of this, whether or not it was building the tower a couple of years ago or, you know, just how expensive things are marked up in pricing due to whether or not it's the supply line crisis or, the price of steel right now. So we're going to get far less bang for our buck on a building that's about the same size of what they have at State, from what I've gathered from people that I know. I also don't know if it's the most brilliant idea to combine it with another capital campaign going on to expand baseball facilities and, I can't remember exactly the Minji's improvements at the same time. I think we've just been so far behind from a not having a football standpoint. I would rather like to say, okay, let's try and raise a quick $30 million and get the football building built, because, we're going to go after the same coffers. And to me, as a football guy, I want that built first because I think it levels the playing field from where we're at. But I'm also, perfectly understanding of we gotta get better. We gotta do better for our basketball coaches. We gotta do better. We need to continue to build our brand in baseball, because if you're not doing something, you're getting left behind. But that's another thing that we talk about with NIL and all this stuff. Is that money going to continue to go to is it going to continue to go into facility upgrades? Because here's a fun fact for you guys. In the NFL right now, you know how nice those locker rooms are, those coaches' offices? Not very much. They're just kind of sterile. They're just there because that owner is spending all his money on getting players. So, are we going to start paying to get players and just forget about facilities? Well, you can't do that because now you got to recruit. So we got to raise money to go recruit, and now we got to raise money to help pay these recruits once they get here. But these recruits got to have nice facilities when they get here. So, I mean, where's all the money coming from? So it's just, man, what a time to be a college football follower.
Yeah, to your point, Brett, as far as Town Bank Tower, I mean, it's certainly good for recruiting, but at the same time, like Coach Houston has said, if we would have invested, we could have had an extremely nice press box for. I mean, this is going to end up costing us what, between 65 and 70 million or something like that. If you'd have spent 45 or 50 million on a press box and used that other money to build the indoor.
Yep. As Igo refers to our previous athletic director is Lord Voldemort. But we're beating a dead horse. It's over. It's absolutely time to move on, and I guess we're better late than never. But, I mean, to me, the trailer park in the sky, I've got my own fond memories of being up there as the way it was. I thought then, and I still think now, that what that money actually should have gone to instead of a press box was an indoor with a full football operations building.
Absolutely.
And Ward, I mean, and they've done a great job in Ward on the bottom two floors. But we're playing major college football, guys, and we're sharing it with what used to be classrooms and this. Yeah. We don't have the academic center that we need. I mean, you go to Clemson or you go to trying to think of where else I've gone, or State, where, you know, everything's kind of tied in together of these places I've visited before. You know, we've got what was supposed to be a sports medicine building, and one floor of it's football, or two floors of it is football. I've said for years, you know, if we were going to do the indoor, we should have the operations, but that's too expensive now. So, and it's not going to happen because they put so much money in the Ward. I mean, you'd essentially be building two facilities at the same time.
Well, thank you. That's
one thing very quickly, Dave, that I will give Coach Houston and his staff. Coach Houston's vision for that building, and he communicated it to Pirate Nation through the media shortly after he was hired, because I know, Dave, you went on that tour of Ward, and you had nothing but a very sterile environment, blank walls, and nothing but white or purple walls. And he said there's such a history here at East Carolina with football, and the story's not told anywhere. So, you know, hats off to Coach Houston for having that history told, and on the walls, and all the signage, all the wraps, all the everything that he's put in with the recognition of players in the NFL with the different helmets and so on and so forth is top notch, and they've done the best they can with transforming that space.
Yeah, and the problem is, guys, that when Ward was built in the late 80s, it was already out of date by the time it was built.
Yep.
And the same, going back to your point real quick with Town Bake Tower, we'll wrap this up in a few minutes. You've been generous with your time. The problem with the whole press box thing is it was built in 1978, and they did nothing like it was 1978. They had a scoreboard that was 1978 and 1998. And I'm doing a post-game show, and I find out, I was like, man, it's 20 years old. I mean, it's time to build a new press box, right? If we'd have built that press box in the early 2000s, for example, but we didn't get finished with it until 2019. And that's the problem, is by the time we spent that money on that, if we'd have done it 20 years sooner, we could have had a nice press, or nice press box. We wouldn't have had to pay for it. And then we would have been moving on to something else. Like you said, guys said, I agree wholeheartedly. That was just a resume builder for other people. But now that we've got to pay for it, we're going to pay for it. And then when people say we got the press box, I'm like, we'll be paying that press box off. We'll probably be like in our 60s or 70s by the time we have that thing paid off. So you might as well go ahead and put it out there. And if we raise the money, we do. If we don't, we don't. But it's better to put it out there and show that we have a plan for indoor practice facility. And another thing that we need to do, guys, this is a completely different show, is we've got to do a better job of getting the people that are $100 donors, the $500 donors to the Pirate Club, get them involved. They say they want people involved, but they only had on Thursday night to kick off the campaign, they only had the top 100 donors there, as I found out. So we've got to do a better job. There's more. I wish there were more millionaires out there that we didn't depend on the $100 donors, but that's not reality. And there's a lot of $100 to $500 donors out there that we just kind of say, we don't care about you. But that's a whole other show.
Good comment there from B-Pays. Final thing we had for you, Brett, Johnny Robertson chimed in on Facebook, and you talked about how the current landscape had impacted you as a high school coach. Johnny said, I noticed that Jake Spavadal at Texas State has 44 signees in the last two recruiting classes, in 21 and 22. 33 are from the transfer portal, 7 junior college transfers, and 4 high school signings. I believe that he does this to avoid developing high school talent only to lose them to bigger programs. Do you feel that this could be a trend for some of the programs that are kind of in that same breath?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably an extreme example of it. But, I mean, I do think you're going to see more 50-50 classes, you know, where you've got 12 high school kids and 12 portal kids and whatever the case is. But like I said, what I think is going to end up happening is the trickle-down, that group of five teams and FCS teams all the way down to D2 are going to get initial better freshmen than they've ever got before. Now, I take this as somebody who coached at North Greenville and Gardner-Webb. If you tell me that I'm going to get 25 better freshmen than I've gotten the year before, but I'm going to lose probably 7 or 8 that go up a level, that's fine. Because if I've got 18 better than I've ever gotten before, I'm okay with losing 7, you know, because then I can supplement them with, you know, say I'm a D2 coach, I can supplement those 7 I lost with 7 kids who weren't getting it done at the FCS level, and I can take them down. So I think Texas State's an extreme example of a guy who's just trying to win right away, and is either an extreme example of a guy who's trying to win right away and try and get another job or save his butt from getting fired. But I do think, I mean, you're going to see more classes that are a little bit more evenly distributed between portal and high school kids, no doubt. And it does concern me because that's, you know, I'm probably going to have some FBS kids in the future that go down and play a level because there's no place at the table for them and all the way down, if you will.
Head football coach of West Brunswick, and that would be a former Pirate and former Pirate coach, Brett Hickman. Coach, thank you so much for your time. Hopefully you won't be a stranger. Love to have you back on the summertime as you get ready for your football season, where we can talk more about the Trojans and your team, in addition to the Pirates, as we get ready for the 22 campaign for high school and college football. It's going to be fantastic. And we hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you having me, and you know, look forward to following the program throughout the summer as we get ready for what I think is going to be a fun year.
I definitely hope so. Have a great night, my friend. Appreciate
you. Thank
you.
All right. Thank you, Brett.
All right. Appreciate Brett very much. I know that long show here tonight, but we had a lot of fun. Guys, when you talk football, Matt, you and I know, and Bubba, we can talk football for hours. So we appreciate Coach. We didn't want to keep him too long, but certainly we had so much to talk about. And even though it's a long show, it still doesn't seem long enough with all the topics out there and with all the craziness. You know, I was walking to work the other, for my parking lot to the building that I did work, just thinking about all the craziness in college football and the NCAA. It's just, it's overwhelming at times.
It really is. And, you know, you look at all the changes just in the last few years, and you know, you wonder as a head coach how much time it actually pulls away from just the actual X's and O's of football. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're spending more time now, you know, evaluating transfer portals, learning about new regulations with NIL. I mean, you're being pulled in all these different directions. You wonder how much it actually takes you away from just the X's and O's of football. And I don't know. I personally just don't like where it's going, Dave, but it is what it is. It's a train that's not going to stop. But, you know, I also wanted to mention, I really appreciate Brett and his football knowledge. I love what he does on Hoist the Colors with when he breaks down plays. I'm kind of a football nerd, so I appreciate, you know, the schemes, the talks, the terminology, the great work he does. So really, really enjoyed, you know, having him on.
No doubt about it. We're fortunate and blessed to have great guys like him and to come on the show. And then it's going to be really interesting to see how we do in football this year. We're very excited, and obviously keep it right here. By the way, I want to remind everybody, a lot of the great program before we go, Bubba, you've had a lot of good guests on. The last couple of days, you can go back, and I know Jamie Shaw has been on. For example, make sure you go check that out.
Yeah, Jamie Shaw from On3 Sports, as well as Absolute Basketball, not doing as much with Absolute Basketball as he once did, but Jamie does an excellent job covering the college game. I talked to him about, I think, at least six of the incoming Pirates. There were some that he wasn't as familiar with, but, talked about guys like Ezra Asar, and then several others with this class. Mike Schwartz elected to go, more the high school route. You did have a couple of transfers, coming in from Tennessee as well as Iowa State, but the majority of the class is from the high school ranks. And then you did have the two Division I transfers and then the one JUCO transfer. And like Coach Schwartz pointed out tonight at the Pirate Armada, each of those three transfers has 3 years remaining. So it's not like we're getting a guy, as much as I would love to have gotten another guy like a Vance Jackson. Obviously, he just had 1 year to play.
No doubt. And by the way, one of my fans also, Pirates, have a big homestand this week. And congratulations. What a great baseball game last night, guys. That was on the edge of our seats once I did the kids' homework and got a chance to – I guess I was at the best part, but Pirates came back, and I love the heart of the team and the grit. Like, I think that we finally have Matt Simmons as a baseball fan. I'm not quite sure, 100% sure on that, but they definitely have the grit and the heart of a Matt Simmons, so maybe he can relate to that. But anyway.
I really enjoy this team, guys. I really do. They had – talk about adversity like we were earlier in the show. I mean, they had a lot of adversity early in the season. I mean, to lose your top pitcher, to drop your opening series of the season, the record wasn't up to par there in the first half of the season. And then to do what they've done, I mean, this is a team that just keeps working. They keep getting better. You got to give major credit to Cliff Godwin for keeping this thing together, keeping it heading in the right direction. Just a great job. And maybe it's not the most talented team we've ever had. Maybe it's not the deepest pitching staff we've ever had. But these guys, they show up to play. They battle, and they're going to be a tough out.
35-18, of course, 17-4 on the season. And, Bubba, I know a big series. I want to what tickets – I don't know how many they have available, but you can go to ecpirates.com or 1-800-DIAL-EC. Get your tickets for this weekend. I will try to take my kids to one of the games. It probably will be, looks like Sunday. We can take them there.
Yeah, and you're talking about plugging some of the recent content. In addition to Jamie Shaw, had an excellent conversation today, and that was with Ben Upton of the 11.7 podcast. Yep. Those guys have a tremendous listenership. They have nearly right at 29,000 followers on Twitter. Have developed a very strong following over the last 3 or 4 years. And I really respect the work that they do along with, obviously, D1 Baseball. So if you're a college baseball fan, definitely follow at D1 Baseball and also at 11 point spelled out, 11.7 pod. Two tremendous follows for the diehard college baseball fan. And they, they're constantly retweeting highlights and happenings from around the nation. And they love, I know Ben, at least, who played at Mercer and experienced the jungle firsthand. He absolutely loves everything that East Carolina baseball brings to the table. And the Pirate Nation has grown by one with him if East Carolina's not playing Mercer. And, I know he really loves everything that Cliff Godwin and this staff are doing, and thinks it's just a matter of time before Cliff and company get us to Omaha. But definitely go back and check out that conversation. We talked about a lot of teams from around the nation, not only East Carolina, and then we also dove into things like the raccoon that was caught in the stands at Arkansas's Bomb Stadium over the weekend in that series between the Razorbacks and Vanderbilt. It was pretty hilarious. If you guys haven't seen that video, you need to check it out. I meant to send it to you if I didn't. And
you did.
In addition to that, let's see, Matt and I, because I think Dave, you'll probably be working at this time. If not, we'd love for you to join us. But this coming week, I believe it's going to be Wednesday afternoon, we'll be visiting with Michael Papajohn. Michael Papajohn played baseball at LSU. He was on LSU's first two College World Series teams in 86 and 87 under Skip Bertman. And he went on right as he was finishing his LSU career. He had exhausted his baseball eligibility and was still finishing school. And he became a hitman there, stunt double in Everybody's All-American that was being filmed at Tiger Stadium. And that led to a career that's still going on in the film industry. He lived out in Hollywood for, 27, 28 years, but is now back in Baton Rouge, but still very involved in the film industry. He was Bobby Boucher's stunt double, Adam Sandler's stunt double in The Waterboy back in 1998, and was in For the Love of the Game with Kevin Costner as one of the players for the Yankees. Also was in The Longest Yard with Adam Sandler in 2005. So that's going to be a tremendous conversation with Michael Papajohn.
I didn't know about that part of it. I knew about the baseball. I didn't know about the acting part. I missed out. By the way, I misspoke. Thanks to Johnny Gardner. I knew it and I said it wrong. I meant to say the Saturday game. This weekend, of course, is Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday for the weekend because of the tournament starting next weekend on Tuesday in Clearwater. So thank you, Johnny. I misspoke on that and I appreciate you for correcting that. So I wanted to say that before we left. Anyway, thanks to Brett Hickman, Coach Hickman, for coming on tonight. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Bubba. Appreciate everybody so much. Don't forget, we'll have extra innings this weekend. Hopefully we can talk about on Sunday night. We can talk about a big victory. And Next Level Training Center is our great, great sponsor. And I know we've got a big person coming on, don't we? A big guest?
We do. We caught up with this guy just prior to the season, and he'll join us on Sunday for extra innings. Is Bridgie, Matt Bridges, living down in Atlanta now with Cam Colmore, working for Grover Gaming. Garrett Blackwelder, former Pirate Basketballers company. We'll catch up with Bridges and maybe, who knows, maybe Cam Colmore will join as well. And we'll talk about the season that was for the Pirates in terms of the regular season and look forward to the conference tournament down in Clearwater. Maybe get some stories out of those guys about conference tournaments past and what it's like to play for the Pirates and Cliff Godwin going into the postseason.
No doubt. And Mark Colloway, appreciate you and Johnny. There's a lot of great guys watching live right now, and Lawrence Tibbetts. There's a lot of great people as well. So appreciate the comments and questions tonight. Brandon Forbush as well. All right, we're going to get out of here. Appreciate you guys very much. We'll see you on Sunday for extra innings. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul, and I don't